Republicans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
And in full disclosure, there is no dark bunny behind the Peter B. Collins podcast. We thank the people who subscribe, including Bernice Del Orto, Wilfred Bork, Aaron Blair, and Kathleen Emmer. Joining me now from Public Citizen, a watchdog group in Washington, D.C., is Research Director Taylor Lincoln of the Congress Watch Division at Public Citizen. Taylor, thanks for joining me on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, thank you for having me.
You and your colleagues have researched and published a study on the dark money spending in this year's political cycle. And first of all, could you give us a quick primer on the difference between the super PACs and the dark money so-called nonprofit groups?
That's right. So with the Citizens United decision in 2010, which opened the gates on all manner of spending by outside groups, those that aren't technically connected to the candidates, there came to be two main venues through which people spent money. It wasn't that corporations would spend money out of their own treasuries under their own names, but they would give it to other groups or committees that would spend the money on their behalf. And the two types of committees are super PACs. That's an informal term, but generally recognized around town. And these are entities that are recognized by the Federal Election Commission. They can spend as much money as they want. They can accept as much money as they want, pretty much from whoever they want. But they have to disclose who they got the money from.
Mm-hmm.
The other are nonprofit groups, commonly known as 501Cs, for the part of the tax code that they are registered under.
Right.
They are not supposed to be primarily engaged in the activity of influencing the outcomes of elections. However, there's been very, very little enforcement of that, and fundamentally, a lot of these groups are, in fact, at heart, fundamentally engaged in influencing the outcomes of elections, and they do not have to disclose where their money comes from. So they are a repository. They're a receptacle for money for people who want to influence elections but want to keep either an individual's name or a business's name out of the newspaper.
And, Taylor, the legal issue bears on the language that they use and whether or not it amounts to electioneering. And as I understand it, I'm not a lawyer, but electioneering is when you advocate for the election or defeat of a specific candidate. And I learned on Frontline just about 10 days ago that there are magic words that come out of Supreme Court decisions and footnotes, in fact, that if you avoid using those specific magic words, then presumably your activity falls within the law and is not considered explicit electioneering.
Right. I hate to say it, but I think it's a little bit more complicated. That is how it used to be. But what's happened, it used to be there were advertisements that people called sham issue ads.
Right.
Where a person or a committee, a political party, would run an advertisement to influence the outcome of the election, but would make it seem like it was trying to persuade the legislator to vote a different way on a bill, which is a completely permitted, unregulated form of communication. And so they might say, call Senator so-and-so and tell her to stop killing babies.
Right.
Well, you know, that would run 2 days before the election. There wasn't any legislation in Congress about killing babies and so forth. With Citizens United, one thing it did is it made it so you can use those, any group can use those magic words without running afoul of the law, that they can say vote for so-and-so. So people aren't really pretending anymore. And likewise, the law has come to recognize that if you run an advertisement that mentions a candidate in the last 60 days before an election, that it is really regarded as an electioneering. It's called an electioneering communication.
Yeah.
So that distinction that they talked about on Frontline is really, that's really passed. People understand that ads, whether they say vote for, vote against, or don't, that are run in the last 60 days before an election, those are electioneering. And the groups, be they nonprofits or super PACs, they're not shrinking from the fact that they're doing this. But the issue is that the nonprofits are able to get away with it because the only people that could stop them would be the IRS. And the IRS is very hesitant to come in and crack down and say, you're not really a social welfare group or you're not really a business trade association. You're really a
political action committee
organization that's using a trick to keep your donors secret.
Now, I don't know if you're an attorney, Taylor, and, and if this exceeds your expertise, feel free to just say so. But I recall the use under the tax code of the 527 committees that were popular in 2004.
Yep.
The Swift Boat guys who went after John Kerry used a 527.
Yep.
And I believe that the IRS did, in fact, after the election, crack down on those. And so we're not seeing 527s used. Instead, we're seeing a 501c3 or a 501c4.
Right. What happened is actually the those issue ads, it wasn't the IRS, it was the FEC that went after these groups.
Okay.
But essentially what they did is they broadened the definition of express advocacy in part pursuant to an earlier Supreme Court ruling, and basically said, even though you didn't say vote for, vote against, this was electioneering, and you have to register as an electioneering group, whereas the 527s were sort of in this nebulous shadow zone of not being regulated. But today, those groups wouldn't have any of those problems whatsoever, because there wasn't the option to be a super PAC before 2004. So today, those groups would just, the Swift Boats veterans, as a 527, actually did disclose their donors. Today, they would just do whatever they wanted to do and disclose their donors, and they would face no potential legal repercussions. They'd be totally free.
Okay.
But and we think here at Public Citizen that that's no good for democracy to have unlimited contributions from all stripes of donors going into our elections. But what our report today talked about is that subset of people who are hiding within the 501c category.
And what you did was a study of the outside money spent on Senate races across the country.
The 10 most competitive ones in a general election, yeah.
Okay. And you exclusively focused on these groups that are nominally nonprofits under the tax code section 501c. And did any of them voluntarily report where their money came from?
I can't tell you that they didn't. I don't believe so. That would actually be a, there's about 50 of these groups. So that would be a research project that we haven't conducted.
Okay.
But generally speaking, they don't.
All right. And so the number one group is Karl Rove's Crossroads GPS. And just to be clear again, he has two organizations.
That's right.
American Crossroads is structured as what? A super PAC?
That's correct.
And so it does disclose where its money came from.
That's right.
But GPS is a 501c4.
Correct.
And it does not report where the money came from. And Taylor, in my commentary yesterday after the election, I started to say that Karl Rove is fielding lots of phone calls from angry billionaires and millionaires this morning. But then I caught myself and said, well, it could just be one or two. We really don't know right. the depth of the donor base for these organizations.
Right. Well, we do know for the super PAC, and I don't have those, but we know the certain donors, Adelson, Bob Perry, there are mm-hmm. certain donors that were the big donors to the super PAC.
Right, but GPS...
That's right. We don't know to the GPS.
It could have been funded by one person.
Or a corporation.
Uh-huh.
It probably wasn't.
Yeah.
My guess is it was funded by a number of contributions in the $100,000 to $1 million range
mm-hmm.
from very wealthy individuals and private companies and possibly some publicly traded companies.
So Crossroads GPS, according to your research, mm-hmm. spent just under $37 million on Senate races alone this fall.
Just these 10 Senate races, that's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. And they were followed about half as much money, about $19 million, spent mm-hmm. by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
The chamber was very active in congressional races here in California as well.
Right.
Then the pro-democratic groups show up.
Yep.
Patriot Majority and the environmental group, the League of Conservation Voters.
Yep.
Followed by the NRA, Vote Vets, which is pro-democratic. Mm-hmm. And so while the money, I think your other chart shows that roughly 25% of the money was pro-democratic. Is that right?
Of this, of if we add up super PACs and the 501Cs?
Oh, it comes to...
Within the 501C realm, yeah, about 25% was pro-democratic. So if within the 10 contests that we looked at,
mm-hmm.
the super PAC spending was about 53% of the spending and of the kind of unregulated outside spending.
Right.
And the 501Cs were about 47. But within the super PAC realm, the spending was divided about 50-50 in terms of that trying to help Democrats and that trying to help Republicans,
mm-hmm.
whereas within the 501C it was about 4-1 Republicans. So the 501Cs are like magnets for Republican money.
Yeah. And one of the things that I want to be fair about, because I don't protect Democrats here, I'm a liberal, but I watch this an attempt to be objective. Frontline, I thought, did an excellent job of not only exposing the way the Western Tradition Partners, who became American Tradition Partners, funded campaigns and even candidates in Montana, but also that the Democratic groups have adopted the same tactics. And they end up using postal boxes at UPS stores
mm-hmm.
in Washington, D.C. as the blind location, and you can't trace them any further.
That's right.
Have you been able to get any further than those P.O. boxes to identify the actual office locations and the individuals who call the shots on both Democratic and Republican dark money groups?
Right. I mean, that's not something in this particular project that we've done. We have looked into that sort of thing in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, sometimes there's a group, and you're like, well, who is this group? Like, there was a group called Americans for Clean Air, I believe, in 2000 that was running ads that was killing McCain in New York State and for George W. Bush, and it created an outrage. People try to figure out who they are, and eventually it was determined who they were. But I have to say, in this particular case, there's not a lot of secrets about the front of the group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Crossroads GPS.
Right.
It's Karl Rove.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter if they're using a post office box or an office or whatever. They stipulate to that. That is who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as to where their money comes from, you know, that's more than just knocking on the door and seeing who's working there. That's something that we don't know.
Yeah. And but on the Democratic side, we don't know who the equivalent of Karl Rove is, do we?
I can't tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a group on the Democratic side, a 501C, that's anywhere as near as big.
Right, I understand
that.
But
there could be. But I don't see this as a Democratic versus Republican thing. Other than that, Democrats tend to be more friendly to rules to make the campaign finance system cleaner and more transparent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I also don't necessarily blame the Democrats for availing themselves of these options if the Republicans are going to. But my overriding view is that this stuff is just no good. It's not good for a democracy to have checks of $1 million or $100,000 or $1 million or $10 million flowing to these groups, which are dedicated to getting a candidate or a few candidates elected. And and oftentimes the money's not even is not even disclosed. I think most people would just say that's just kind of not very good, and it's the sort of thing that leads to corruption, and it inevitably will. This this scheme here will come tumbling down, and mark my words, because it's always happened in Washington that when you get the big money flying around, stuff happens. Either people are embezzling money off the top, or basically candidates become beholden to these groups. Things happen once they get elected. Threats are made about what they're going to do to you next time because individuals have too much power, or individual groups and so forth, power brokers. And the whole idea of our campaign finance system since the Watergate reforms has kept been to keep the contributions, one, from individuals, from people who have Social Security numbers, so you don't have the aggregation within corporate or union treasuries, right? And two is to keep the amount small enough, though they might not seem small to your listeners, that small, like $2,500 now, that the candidate doesn't feel upon being elected that he's beholden or she's beholden to that donor, right?
Right.
So $2,500 is a lot of money to me. I'm not going to be making a contribution to a candidate of $2,500 anytime soon. But the candidate might raise, Senate candidate, $6 or $12 million. They're not going to feel like that $2,500 is the sort of thing that they're going to move heaven and earth to, you know, do something for my my nuclear waste company or my landfill or my, you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
And so it's just kind of a healthier way of being. And the Supreme Court tossed that stuff out with Citizens United. When they threw it out, they said that there would be transparency. That was one of their justifications. So they said, now we have the internet, we have transparency, and the voters can evaluate these messages, and they can evaluate the candidates because they know the flow of the money. Well, they don't. The Supreme Court was wrong, whether intentionally or just got it wrong. They don't, because you could say that the court was naive and it just assumed that, for instance, a company like Texaco or General Electric would just spend the money under their own name. That's not how it happens. They give to Crossroads GPS. And so the promise of disclosure wasn't fulfilled, and all this money is floating around, and it's just plain not healthy.
Well, and what's interesting, Taylor, is my immediate impression here, just a couple of days after the election, is that voters are getting fairly smart about this, and that despite all of this spending, much of it on negative advertising, that voters, in many cases, rejected the candidates who had the biggest money behind them.
That's right. Well, there was a lot of money. I don't have the money stacked up. If you have to add up how much the candidate raised himself or herself as well.
Right.
So a couple of messages to take. For instance, if you take Obama, he was outspent greatly by the outside groups, but he also outraised Romney on the legitimate inside money. And it turns out there's a lot of advantages to doing it that way, besides the fact it's just more on the up and up. But when you raise money on your own, you're raising it in small amounts, and those are the sort of people that are fired up about you that are going to help you all the way through. I gave $200 to Obama. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm on the team. Whereas if one person writes you a check for $10 million to one of these to Mitt Romney Super PAC, well, that's still just one guy, you know? But if I raise $10 million by $200 contributions, that's that many people that are a lot more fired up.
Yeah.
So that's so I might be mixing a few comments, but that's one aspect of all of this, is that there was money on both sides. And I think another aspect, which is cause for optimism, is that money is not determinative, okay? It's very important, and it definitely holds sway over the policy debates in Washington, and it's a big factor, and it gets a lot of coverage, and it takes up way too much part of candidates' time and concentration and concern. Stipulate to all of that, but there is a limit to how far money will go. And so, for example, out in California, you don't have a Governor Huffington, even though a candidate Huffington spent. What did she spend? Whitman, I mean.
Yeah, Meg Whitman spent $125 million of her own money,
there
and a
go.
Total of $160 million.
Yep.
And Arianna did run in the recall election, but that wasn't a big money race.
Yeah, I met what was her husband,
race.
Michael Huffington, that spent all that money back in the late
90s. 1992, yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. I remember that right. Very well.
So I guess to anybody who would say money is the be-all and end-all, and it's determinative, I would say ask Governor Whitman or Senator Fiorino about that. Right? And that doesn't mean that we can't and shouldn't have better regulation, enforcement, and transparency of campaign spending.
Mm-hmm.
It's not mutually exclusive, and so I think some people are worried about that today. Like, oh, this thing, oh, you know, no, we should have that. It also means that there is some cause for optimism in that the electorate does have some ability, and that we're not completely at the mercy of this money, right? So I think one of President Obama's favorite expressions is that the arc of history bends towards justice, and in that way, it can at times overcome the big money.
Taylor, you may be familiar that here in California, we had last-minute disclosure of the source of $11 million that was secretly funneled into a nonprofit in California in support and opposition of a couple of initiatives that were on the ballot. And the state Supreme Court got into this at the very last minute, and they did get partial disclosure. And this $11 million originated with a Virginia nonprofit out of Alexandria called Americans for Job Security,
oh, yeah.
Which, according to the news accounts, has passed links to the Koch brothers. And they used a very complicated 4 washing machines. The money started with this outfit in Virginia. Then it was passed through 2 separate entities in Arizona before it was then laundered a final time by the group in Sacramento. And I can't prove that the money came from the Koch brothers, but let's just assume that for this conversation. Why would they bother to do that when the Supreme Court gave them the authority to directly to contribute to campaigns of all types? Why do they need to obscure the source of this funding?
Okay, so just purely hypothesizing here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is the money toxic once it's connected to that name and to go through these steps? I've been writing about Americans for Job Security for years. To me, I hear Americans for Job Security, and my antennae go up, and I say distrust.
Mm-hmm.
But to an average viewer, I mean, maybe people are becoming cynical, but it kind of sounds all right, right? Americans for Job Security.
Oh, sure.
That sounds a lot better than paid for by the Koch brothers.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. And what about other corporations? Chevron, the highly profitable oil company based here in California, in the end put about $2.5 million into campaigns, but they funneled it all through other entities. And, you know, they don't seem to be embarrassed by what their politics are or who they support. But we have not seen direct contributions from corporate coffers. And I find that surprising.
Well, in that case, we did, though, right?
Yeah, but most others
right.
appear to prefer to use these beards.
Well, we don't know how much of the spending by the 501Cs came from big corporations. We would guess that Chamber of Commerce money did, because that's the kind of people that would make contributions to the Chamber of Commerce,
mm-hmm.
right? That they have a membership base, and they have a lot of big companies that belong to them, and so it makes sense. So we don't know. Why Chevron went the route of giving to a super PAC, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, we just don't know if the others are hiding. You know, I guess I just don't have enough information on the case. I mean, it could be that the person making the contribution from the company just wasn't as familiar with all the nuances of election law. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there have been times when things have gotten disclosed, and the disclosee is the most surprised party. Like, oh, gee, I didn't realize that was going to happen. I don't know if Chevron has said anything about this.
Not to my yeah. knowledge. So I just Great. Wanted to use them as yep. the exceptional yep. example, because most other corporations seem to prefer to put it through a front group of some sort.
Well, right. I mean, those are some of the most reputationally averse entities in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's more, especially any corporation that has direct interaction with retail consumers, is going to be incredibly sensitive to their reputation. You know, it's conceivable that the CEO of some companies, there's some swashbuckling CEO that's kind of cocky, and it's like, I don't give a damn,
you know,
and I'm just going to do it. And there's companies that care more about their reputations and less.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem to me, I'm not quite sure how an oil company's reputation particularly matters. They get the stuff out of the ground, and we need it, right?
Well, and Taylor, one another set of exceptions is not candidate campaigns, but we had a ballot measure here, number 37, to require food labels for products that contain genetically modified organisms.
Right.
And Monsanto and Bayer and a whole panoply of other companies in the agriculture, food, pesticide, and seed business all openly contributed to that campaign. So those are the ones who aren't shy. But it appears that many others are. Now, is there a requirement that the corporations who donated to these dark entities report that to the government or their shareholders after the fact?
No.
Not at all.
There is a proposal in Congress called the Shareholder Protection Act that would mandate that.
Uh-huh.
And there's also a rule that we at Public Citizen are pushing and making some progress on before the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Mm-hmm.
My prediction is that rule... So things are going to happen here. We're not, the status quo is not going to remain for all that much longer. I don't know what the things will be. There's a lot of possibilities. But in the absence of stronger remedies, I think we're going to get a rule like that, because I think that there's sort of a body of people who college professors or esteemed college professors and so forth that are sort of corporate ethics arbiters and watchdogs, and not just ethics, but sort of best practices types. And there's a general consensus emerging that companies ought to disclose this sort of stuff to their shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're spending their shareholders' money, and there should be a procedure. They're not, these people never want to have their hands tied, so they're not going to accept a rule that says that we will not spend money on elections, because corporations just never want to have a freedom taken away from them. But I think that we will be getting a rule that requires some disclosure to shareholders. It's going to be a little bit, but we'll get it.
Yeah. Well, Taylor, my final question, you may or may not have information about this, but I'm just curious. Over the past few months, I've been receiving email press releases from a group that calls itself the Catholic Association. And I've tried to interview representatives from that group, but apparently they know I don't share their viewpoint, and so they declined. And I've done a little investigation. If you go to their website, there's no board of directors. There's no description of the entity itself. They don't file at GuideStar, a nonprofit tax return. And yet they are engaged in direct electioneering. They published a voter guide, which clearly tilted to Romney over Obama. And so I don't know if you've ever heard of this group, but are there dark money entities that are kind of off the radar, representing, say, in this case, the Catholic bishops, it appears?
Mm-hmm.
And what would their requirements be to report under the Supreme Court decision and current law?
Yeah, so first of all, yes, there could be ones that are completely off the radar and don't register as anything because so little enforcement is done, and there's just no real mechanism for enforcement right now of a group such as that.
Mm-hmm.
If they are running electronic ads, if they're running broadcast ads, they do have to disclose their spending, which is distinct from their contributors.
Right.
Generally speaking, companies have done that. There have been some exceptions, but generally speaking, organizations that are running ads, they do have to report that to the FEC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of their being off the radar, it's quite possible that a group could fire itself up as a 501 and do what it wants to do and file a 990 a year and a half later. They
uh-huh.
could say their fiscal year ends in October 30th of, or let's say July 30th of 2013. They have another decent amount of time, 4 or 5 months before their tax forms due.
Mm-hmm.
They file for an extension. There goes another 5 months. Right?
Yeah.
And next thing you know, it's 2020 before they have to file anything. So there's a very, the law is very, very permissive. But once they do, what are you going to find out? You'll find out what their revenue was,
mm-hmm.
what their expenditures were, and if they tell the truth, they'll say what their amount of dollars was to influence elections. They might say they can say they're board members or whatever. It could be one board member. There's just so little they have to say.
Yeah. And is there an explicit prohibition on money coming from tax-exempt religious entities into political activities?
Yes. If you're a 501c3, and this is a distinction, that's what's commonly known as a charity.
Mm-hmm.
And people sometimes throw the word 501c3 around, thinking that's what these dark money groups are.
Right.
But they're not 501c3s. So 501c3 is a charity. It can accept tax-deductible contributions, and that's what churches typically are.
Mm-hmm.
They really can't be involved in elections in a way that rises to the level of, you know, that it's a pretty sensitive test for them being involved in elections.
Yeah.
And I've been looking at this stuff for a long time, and I would say, generally speaking, we don't see that from 501c3s. That's not to say that a church might not say something to its parishioners on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of sort of mass media broadcasts and so forth, you don't see that. If a church were giving to a social welfare group, a 501c4,
mm-hmm.
that was in turn using that money for a tax for electioneering,
right?
That would be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe it wouldn't be enforced, but it seems to me that's one area of the law that seems to be respected is 501c3s overtly involving themselves in elections.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, it's quite a murky world, Taylor, and I appreciate you and the folks at Public Citizen putting a little sunlight on the dark money that was involved, at least in the Senate races. That's what you've covered so far.
Yep.
And will you be conducting additional research into this year's dark money?
We'll keep going. You know, we did a report. We've done a number of reports. We did one about 2 weeks ago that was on groups, on super PACs
mm-hmm.
that only donated to, that only gave money to influence a single race. Essentially, they helped one candidate. And why that was important is because, aside from the promise of disclosure, the other underlying premise of the Supreme Court's decision was that independent money, outside money that's quote-unquote independent, doesn't have the same corrupting effect of as direct contributions to a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that, that these groups, like Mitt Romney has his own super PACs, a lot of the Senate candidates had their own super PACs, the congressional candidates had their own super PACs. Well, contribution to those groups is almost like a contribution directly to the candidate. And so, in our view, that really destroys the foundation of the Supreme Court's thinking in freeing up all this outside money in Citizens United,
mm-hmm.
because it said it's independent and not corrupting. They said, we find that this money is not corrupting. Well, they really can't, I don't see how they can look at this evidence and hold that view any further.
Well, Taylor, you've just raised something. I'll just ask you this final question. I saw a remarkable sequence of events while I was watching Jeopardy the night before the election. And there were three 30-second commercials in a row with the exact same message. And one of them came from a group that it flashed by on the screen.
Yep.
So fast I couldn't see it. But it was an outside group, not a campaign. Then was American Crossroads. And then there was an actual commercial from the Romney campaign. And they were the words were different, but they each used a white female who either had a child or was in a kitchen, you know, a family setting.
I know her, yeah.
And they described how the narrative was, I voted for Obama four years ago, but I can't do it again because he hasn't fixed the economy.
Yep.
And what level of coordination is permissible between a campaign, between Crossroads GPS, and this third unidentified dark money group in terms of using the same research and the same exact message in what is supposed to be uncoordinated activities?
Right. So the answer is, among the outside groups, they can coordinate all they want. But with the campaign, they cannot at all. And actually, you mentioned Americans for Job Security. There was one that they ran several years ago. It was in the Pennsylvania Senate race with Senator Santorum, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very similar ads the same actors and so forth, maybe the same graphics, on the Santorum's official campaign ad and the Americans for Job Security. You know, and of course they say, well, we use the same agency,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah. The coordination is, well, all that goes to show is what a joke this discussion is. discussion of not coordinating really is.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, short of a phone conversation, short of having the phones tapped and having a conversation in which you've got somebody from the campaign talking to somebody from the super PAC, coordination's almost impossible to prove. And yet, for them to achieve their purposes, they can live within the letter of the law completely.
Mm-hmm.
And just be completely, they can cheat if they want, but they could not cheat, and they can still effectively coordinate. As some of the super PACs have said, all they have to do is watch what the campaign's doing.
Right.
So the whole thing is a fiction. This whole notion of any kind of coordination law providing any protection whatsoever, even if we could enforce it, it would be a joke, and we can't enforce it.
What I understand is often they will take their research and their commercials and put them up on a website.
Yeah.
And let their colleagues that they're not coordinating with find it.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think that's not something that we've chosen to do a lot of research here, because
mm-hmm.
in my mind it's like, it's just like proving the sky is blue. I think there's no, the super PACs themselves don't dispute that effectively they can stay in sync with the candidate.
Yeah.
That law is it's not even, to call it a paper tiger would be saying too much, because it doesn't even pretend to be a tiger.
Yeah. Taylor Lincoln, thank you for the work you do.
And question. Thank you very much.
Hope we can talk again soon.
You can
visit the website of Public Citizen at citizen.org.
Thanks so much.
Dark money, obscuring corporate contributions and those from millionaires and billionaires. Oh, what a wonderful world.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until